Hello, this is your host, Belle Shavey speaking. Welcome to today's episode of the Morrison Family Center for Student Wellbeing's podcast, WellCat 101. The purpose of this podcast is to give students an opportunity to share their college experiences, their advice, or interesting anecdotes for listeners who are students, staff, parents, etc. Each episode topic will be related to student well-being and or mental health through the lens of positivity and growth. We hope you enjoy this episode of WellCat 101. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of WellCat 101. Today is a super exciting day because right now we are here in the president's residence with our guest, First Lady of Kansas State University, Sally Litton. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being here.
Awesome. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do?
Yeah. So in addition to being the First Lady at K-State, I actually have my own business, which we're going to dig into a little bit today. I am an ADHD life coach. So I work with people all over the U.S. from college age all the way to retirement.
Awesome. So like we do with all of our episodes, before we dive right into our topic for today's, I just thought we would talk about our favorite fall activities because campus is starting to look like my favorite season, which is fall. We're getting into October, the leaves are turning, and I just thought it would be fun to ask, what is your favorite fall activity?
So every day, the last couple of weeks since the weather's been so nice, I walk campus with the dogs, and I love it. The temperature's great. Everything looks beautiful. You know, the garden is gorgeous. So that's kind of my fall thing.
I love that. I think, walk around campus significantly more during the fall time once it gets a little cooler. And, you know, I mean, it's a little bit rainier than normal right now, but
you can find your pockets. It's okay.
Yes. Yes, you definitely can. Campus walks are so fun.
They're great. And the dogs love it.
Yes. Awesome. Well, to jump right into it, October is Health and Wellbeing Month, and you know that we on this podcast are all about that. Later this month, a lecture is being presented at K-State from the Mayo Clinic, specifically about ADHD, yes?
Yeah, we're doing an ADHD day, essentially. So we have a roundtable talk that you can sign up for. You need to register for that in advance. We're doing an open lecture for everybody. So we have two experts from Mayo Clinic coming in that focus specifically on ADHD that will lead that and give us some really exciting information and how to work with people whose brains run at a faster pace. And then there will be a wrap-up session later in the afternoon, too, that you can come to and ask any questions. It's going to be fun.
That sounds so exciting. I'm actually very happy about that. And I know that you are also involved in a walk around campus event later this month with Exercise is Medicine. We just talked to them. That was the topic of our last episode. We met with the president and vice president of that student organization. So we are definitely trying to shed light on every aspect of well-being. And especially with the Mayo Clinic coming to talk about ADHD, we wanted to have you as a guest on this episode.
Thank you. Yeah, so, that walk will be fun too. And I mean, it's taking a break to get out, right? And kind of reset, move your body, get going. So that's what we're going to do on that walk. I think it's next week, actually.
Yeah. It's one of the biggest themes of this podcast. They are barking.
The dogs are barking.
That's so cute. One of the biggest themes of this podcast that I want to emphasize is trying to remove the stigma that surrounds conversations regarding mental health. Mental health conditions are so much more common than people realize, and specifically today, we would like to have a conversation about ADHD, what it is, how it affects college students, how places can become more accessible, how to input skills and habits in your daily life that can really help you if you are someone with ADHD. And I am thrilled to have Sally Litton here today to talk with me because you are an executive function ADHD and life coach. So to jump right into it for our listeners, can you tell us how you became an ADHD executive function and life coach?
Yeah, so it's been a journey. I think the reason why a lot of people start their own businesses is develops out of a passion that you might fall into unexpectedly. So we had a family member diagnosed and went through all sorts of stuff with schools and things. And I dove into it full force and spent about 10 years researching everything and studying it and loved it so much. I couldn't get enough of learning more and more. And so when I was looking at going back to work, all my friends said, you need to do this. Like, you should work with people and families on this. So I didn't even know it was an option to be an ADHD life coach. So I did all of that and started my own business. And it's been amazing to help people.
Yeah. I'm not super familiar with an ADHD coach and what they do. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So ADHD is just your brain functions in a different way, essentially. So I like to think of it as it's just a different way of thinking. It's not something wrong with you. Does it cause challenges in certain situations? Yes. But what we do as ADHD coaches is we help people identify their strengths, because when we lean into our strengths, that's when we actually can succeed and grow. A lot of times when kids especially have challenges, we tend to lean into what they're not good at. And what I do is focus on what are you good at, right? And how can we grow that and help you develop strategies based on what works for you? So that's really what a coach does. Lead with curiosity, ask questions, and lean into people's strengths.
Yeah. So it's different than a therapist, a tutor, or an academic advisor.
Yes, it is. So there's a very distinct lane separation between therapy and coaching. And, you know, I will identify if I feel like that lane, if a question or something comes up that's more of a therapy route, we just talk about it and talk about developing your team of support. And same with tutors and academic advisors. If they're trained in coaching, yes, they could go that route. And a lot of them will ask really great questions, but there are distinct differences.
Yeah. And you kind of already spoke about this a little bit. For our listeners who might not know, what exactly, I guess, how would you concretely define what ADHD is? Because I think there's definitely a social perception of it and then what it actually is as a diagnosis.
Yeah. So the National Institute of Health will tell you that it's an attention disorder, right? So it's the inability to focus and pay attention, and also the hyperactivity piece is impulsivity. However, the ADHD experts in the field will tell you it's not a deficit of attention, so it's not attention deficit. It's actually an abundance of attention in things you're interested in. Where the struggle comes in is if it's something that's boring to an ADHD brain, that's when it's hard to pay attention. So I think the perception is that people with ADHD are either climbing up the walls, jumping off of stuff, not paying attention, can kind of be the typical, like stereotypical impression. But really what it is a core focus in areas of interest, curiosity, passion, energy. Like, there's so many good things to describe what it is.
And it's a spectrum, right? Like, it shows up in different ways. And I've read that even it shows up in different ways in men and women.
It does. And also, a lot of times women will fly under the radar and not get diagnosed till a lot later in life, college and beyond, because people assume that hyperactive part that you see typically more in little boys is what ADHD is. And then the girls who might tend to be more inattentive and are daydreaming don't always get diagnosed, or they're masking it in a different way and it doesn't get identified till later.
You talk about masking it. Can you tell us about what that means?
Yeah. So when you mask something, you're trying to fit into what societal expectations are. So if you know, for example, a great example is for somebody with ADHD in a traditional classroom, a lot of times it is very, very hard for them to sit still and try to pay attention if it's a subject they're not really loving. So they're masking themselves, who they really are, to try to fit the expectations of the moment. What happens, though, when you see that is the kid that comes home after school or gets done with their college classes and they are 100% exhausted. So it drains their body budget or their battery way faster. And so we need to be thinking about all that.
Yeah. Is that something that you wish more people understood about ADHD? That's my next question for you, is what do you wish that people generally understood about what ADHD is?
Yeah, I would love for people to understand people do well when they can. And ADHD is not a negative thing. I actually think there are many, many advantages to having ADHD. It's the challenge is you have to find the right environment and you have to find what you really love to do, what your interests are. But it's essentially a different way of thinking. You know, if we think way back in time, like anthropologists, when they talk about the brain, that the ADHD brain would be the hunters, right? They have to respond spontaneously. They have to continually be on top of things and watching and always observant. And it makes complete sense that that's how this brain evolved into what we call the ADHD brain, but it's just a different type of thinking.
Yeah. And you even think about in society today, lots of CEOs, lots of celebrities, lots of business people are super, super successful, and lots of them have ADHD.
Oh, yeah. When you think about the big idea generators and the people that change the world, the out-of-the-box thinkers are oftentimes have on the spectrum in some way, whether it's the ADHD side or, you know, shifting into autism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is one myth about ADHD that you find yourself debunking often? We kind of already talked about it.
Yeah,
a lot,
but I think that I think a lot of people feel that kids or people with ADHD just aren't trying, right? And that is so not true.
Well, you think a lot about executive function. People sometimes can see people who struggle with executive function as lazy, mm-hmm. and that's just not true.
Yeah, because they are most likely trying a whole lot harder, you know, than most people, because it doesn't come as easy. And we need to think about too, like with ADHD, so the prefrontal cortex, which sits, you know, behind your forehead, that's kind of the CEO of the brain that manages multi-level tasking, right? So that develops about 30% slower in the ADHD brain than a neurotypical brain. So if you're 20 years old, you're a sophomore at college, right? Your prefrontal cortex is most likely functioning at about a 14-year-old level. So that then helps us understand that when kids shift to college and take on all these new living by yourself, paying all your bills, not having the support of parents, you know, every night in the house, it's tough. And we need, you know, as a university, and what I try to do as a coach too, is to provide some support and positivity with that.
Yeah, that would definitely make a college environment or a new environment so incredibly challenging when you are learning to function differently.
Yeah.
And that kind of runs into my next question of what aspects of college learning environment can be especially challenging for students with ADHD, that prefrontal cortex development when you are looking around at people whose prefrontal cortexes are developed a little bit further than yours is, how you find camaraderie and also find belonging and also find how to function in a way that works for you when it might seem a little bit easier for other people.
Yeah. So I think key in all of this is having self-compassion for yourself. So if you do have a fast brain and you do feel a little overwhelmed shifting to college, which is very typical for anybody. Be self-compassionate, right? Show yourself kindness. Understand that that's a part of being human, right? This is moving to college. When I talk to students, I explain this is one of the biggest life shifts you'll probably ever have, is leaving your home, right? And moving out on your own for the first time. Mm-hmm. So when you lose that scaffolding and support, it makes sense that it's going to take some time to get your feet underneath you. So it's finding people. Like, the biggest shift for me was finding other people who think like I do, right? They talk fast. They have a fast brain. You know, they verbally process. Try to find some people you click with. And those are the ones that are really going to support you.
Yeah, absolutely. And can hold you accountable, keep you from falling behind, keep you from spiraling and not having that self-compassion for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, it can be difficult to advocate for yourself, I think, when you're in college for the first time and on your own. Thinking about, I mean, even for everyone, college is a shift, but thinking about those with ADHD, a classroom environment, they experience it maybe a little bit differently than other people. Mm-hmm. And how do you communicate with professors, maybe?
So I think advocating for yourself is super important. I also understand that it might feel super scary at first, right? And again, that's normal. When you're able to think about what's the worst case scenario if I advocate for myself, right? So if I go talk to this professor that I'm really nervous, I missed an exam. I actually had this with a client this week, missed turning in an exam. Okay. Super stressed about it, disappointed in themselves, felt horrible. So we talked through, if you talk to your professor, what's the worst thing that can happen? Well, they would say, no, I'm not going to count it. Well, you're already in that place, right? You already have a zero, okay? So what's the best case scenario, right? They could say, I'm going to give you another chance because you've been coming to class. You know, I appreciate you reaching out because I know it's scary, right? So while we were in our session, this college student wrote the professor, right, in a safe space with me. We drafted an email. They sent it, and 10 minutes later, they got a response from the professor saying, I get it. I'm going to reopen the exam for you today.
That is awesome.
Yeah. It doesn't hurt to ask. It's scary. But people here, especially you know, in this environment at K-State, people want to help. Like, we've all been there. We know what it's like. And I would say the high majority of the time, they're going to want to help.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, even all students, it's a little bit scary to advocate for themselves, and especially with something that, you know, as big as like not turning in an exam, or even, yeah, huge. It's huge and scary, but your professors are people, and they will most likely be understanding. And, you know, even if the worst case scenario were to happen, if you surround yourself with those people that you click with, will be there to support you when you feel like, oh, maybe this is the end of the world, because the worst case scenario did happen. You have that support and those people around you,
yeah,
and mental health resources and things, mm-hmm, to help you get back on your feet and recover and say, you know what, I'm going to do my best the next time.
Yeah. And it's not a one and done. Like, I think, I know the ADHD brain very much thinks now or not now, all or nothing. And that's what we work a lot on in coaching, is challenging those thoughts. Like, a decision, no decision is a forever decision, right? And if you can add words to the end of your sentences, like even adding the word yet, right? Like, I haven't completed that yet, or I'm not good at that yet. You know, or I'm going to try this right now. Because then if you do fall off the wagon, you don't see it as a failure. It's just a, well, then I'm going to tweak and I'm going to try something else or I'm going to get back on.
Yeah, that's so helpful. I know I read that rejection sensitivity is, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, is a little bit higher in people with ADHD.
Oh, it's an ADHD thing. It's called rejection sensitivity dysphoria. And I just saw last week, they say 100% of people with ADHD have it. The other numbers I've seen were 96%. So we're in the very, right?
Yeah.
So if you have ADHD, you are probably very sensitive to whether it's real rejection or perceived rejection. So it could be, you know, you went to a party, you felt like you said the wrong thing, and then people were ignoring you, right? That could be true, but it's most likely not true, right? But that's the rejection sensitivity dysphoria creeping in. And it can be an actual physical reaction in your body. And it can last for an hour. It can last up to a month. So when you start thinking about how that impacts you too, right? You need to challenge some of these thoughts because thoughts are not facts. You know, thoughts, when we have a thought, that comes from our brain, and our brain is a prediction machine that predicts off of past experiences.
Yeah, it's our way of keeping us safe. And it's not, you know, your brain is not trying to hurt you, but it is because you're not being chased by a tiger. And also it's like making up things that probably are not true.
Well, and it, yeah, well, it, because if you've had a lot of negative experiences in your life, which if you have ADHD, on average, by the time you reach age 11, you've had 20,000 more negative comments than a neurotypical child. Wow. So if you think about that, and then you think if that's not handled or you're not in the right environment and that goes all the way to college, that's a lot of negative comments that your brain is pulling off of when it makes predictions for you.
Yeah.
But they're not true because the people that often make those comments, it's because they don't understand or they're not saying it for you, right? That's not who you are. So we have to challenge that back. And it's like what you said, even I'll work with people on even saying, okay, brain, thanks for trying to protect me. You know, what else could be true? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, I like that sentiment. It reminds me of the Percy Jackson series, the Percy Jackson books. Rick Riordan wrote those for his son, who I believe was diagnosed with ADHD, and the story about these middle schoolers who are diagnosed with ADHD or, you know, different mental health things, but then later find out that it's because they're demigods. And a metaphor almost for like being diagnosed with these things and finally understanding that the way that they are isn't bad, even though that's what they've maybe been told for a really long time. And all of these strange things out of control happen to them. But then when they find out the reason why, they can then adjust things and find other people like them that are also demigods that at a, you know, a place where they fit. And so it's no longer trying to fit a square peg through a round hole. You feel around like-minded people. And so I think that your sentiment is very similar to that of like, there are just so many things about ADHD that general people don't understand. And if you haven't experienced them, don't know how to connect and don't understand that a social rejection for one person might have a way bigger impact than on another person.
Yeah. And it's like time blindness, okay? That's a big thing with people with ADHD, right? It's the friend that always shows up late. So as the responding friend, right, if you shame and judge them for that, it's really, really hurtful. They're not trying to be late. It's actually, that's another thing I work on with people is where they get caught up often is they just try to do one more thing before they leave the house, right? They think they can get one more thing. And with that now or not now thinking, they don't see time in the same way, and it's called time blindness. So being a friend of somebody with ADHD, it's also, you know, again, taking on that thought process that they're doing well if they can, right? Yeah. They're trying. Something is getting in the way, right? If we notice that there's a behavior that is unique, right? There's a reason for it.
Yeah. And that can be difficult for people with ADHD to make social connections, because although they are trying to show up for their friend, if they're late for something, that, you know, that friend is not going to be very happy about it.
And that's why you need to find other friends with fast brains, because mm-hmm. then we totally get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is, yes. Finding your people. Yes.
Yep.
Kind of switching gears here just a little bit. We've talked about some of the ways that ADHD affects learning environment and social environment, but what are some practical steps that students can make today to make their own learning environments or social environments work better for them?
Yeah. So I think the word environment is key here. So, you need to think about how do you work and learn best, right? So that is, do I like to be in a coffee shop because it's busy, but that actually calms my brain because chaos calms the ADHD brain, right? Do I like to listen to music? I personally listen to, there's a Spotify playlist called ADHD Focus 2025. They update it every year. No lyrics. But what it does is it busies that part of my brain that is constantly moving, like it draws it into the music, and then I can focus. So, you know, do you like to listen to music? Do you like a busy place? Do you like a quiet place? Does it help you to body double, which means you call a friend or you show up? I do a body double session every other week at Hale on Monday afternoons from 3 to 5. Where you're in a room with other people doing, we call it non-preferred tasks. So the tasks that you really have a hard time getting started on, when you do it with other people, it helps, you know?
Yeah.
So thinking about your overall environment and what works for you can have a huge impact. And then it's thinking about what do you love to do? Right. So the challenge, I think, in college is you have a lot of stuff that's not in your control, right? You have to take certain classes, you have to do certain things. So in those situations, it's thinking about, is the major something that you're interested in, or was it something somebody told you you should be interested in? Right. Because I can tell you coming out, if you're doing something you should think you should be doing that somebody else wants you to do, you're not going to like it. Because I worked in a cubicle doing Excel spreadsheets my first 2 years out of college, and I was miserable, right? But I thought that's what I should do, that that was the proper way to start a job, right? So taking time to think about who you want to be, what gives you energy, what drains your energy, and then you start building strategies off of that.
Yeah. And college is a perfect place to discover the kinds of things that you like and the things that do build your energy. And also, you're going to try things that do drain your energy totally. I mean, even as just a regular student, I experience that all the time of like feeling, I don't know, having to do something for a gen ed class or having to do dishes or laundry or something.
Oh, yeah.
That I just, like, I put it off for so long and I don't know how to get started with it. And, you know, even with tasks that might take like 15 minutes, you just can't start them. Mm-hmm. I think body doubling is such a cool way to remedy that. And I'm sure that might not just work for people with ADHD.
Oh, it works for anybody. I mean, like I know students who I met with last year. The one student would invite her friend over to sit on her bed and do homework, and so that she would clean her room. And just having that friend in that space and knowing she was there would get her started on cleaning her room, which she hated to do.
Yeah.
Right? So you're gamifying it. Mm-hmm. So when you make it fun, when you play a game, like say you have six projects due for the week, or six tasks, right? Homework tasks for the week. You can take a dice and roll it And if it's a three, you do number three first, mm-hmm. right? If it's a one, you do one first. And it just makes it a little more interesting.
Yeah.
Make it fun, because some of the stuff is just not fun.
Yeah, definitely. I can agree with that. And like, yeah, I've heard of that, like gamifying it, but I've never thought about it, you know, ways that you can apply it.
Oh yeah. You can use cards. You can use dice. You can use random generators on the computer. A lot of people use time timers, which is a visual way to see a clock. And it's a color that if you set it for 15 minutes, you'll have a wedge of purple that'll slowly decrease. Right. And it helps, but you have to find what works for you, not what works for other people.
Yeah.
So it's trial and error.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. And we kind of touched on this already, but outside the classroom, what parts of the campus environment can support or what can hinder learning for students with ADHD?
So I think getting involved in clubs and organizations that you're interested in can really help, because you're engaged. It gives you that dopamine boost. It gives you something to look forward to. I think the support services on campus, the people do want to help. There's a lot of good support through tutoring, through advising, through the Student Success Center. We have CAPS. I mean, just explore and start looking for things that help you, because I'm not a big fan of blanket strategies, right? Because handing somebody, you know, a document and saying, this is how you should organize your life. Well, no ADHDer has ever read that in their entire life, right? You have to just kind of figure out through trying and maybe failing or not liking and trying again. And that's where that rejection sensitivity piece comes back in, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to keep that in mind to keep. It's not a failure. It's just learning that that's not right for you. And that's good info to have.
Yeah. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you because something didn't work for you. It just means it didn't. Yeah. Mental health is different in the way that you don't use the word cure for mental health. And also, it's not like a medicine that you can take or something. You know, if I have a headache, I can take ibuprofen. Mm-hmm. But mental health is different, and it takes a different kind of remedy.
Yeah. And that's why paying attention to what you're noticing in yourself, right? I think a lot of times we just live every day. We do what we're told, especially, you know, college age, right? You have to do a lot of what you're told, unfortunately. But if you can pause and again, think about what gives you energy, what takes it away, and focus, make sure you're incorporating in those pieces that give you energy.
Yeah. Right? And I think learning how to take care of yourself and make things easier for yourself, college is the first time that you kind of learn how to do that. And you learn how to, you know, I think about, you know, people who are experiencing life and they, you know, things, maybe executive function is really hard for them and they don't pay attention to the way that they're feeling or experiencing things. And so they just live their life, you know, and it's really difficult for them because they haven't discovered or they aren't trying to discover the things that are easier for them. And then once they do, it's like, you know, I was prescribed glasses in the third grade and I remember putting them on and being like, I can see the leaves on the trees.
Right.
Like I couldn't see that before.
Yeah. But it's also even realizing that those opportunities exist, right?
Yeah.
Like you can think in your own way and you can take a different path. Like if you were to look at my career path, it is not a typical career path, right? And my interests over time from college to now. But for me, it's been fabulous,
yeah.
Right? Because you can create your own journey and there is no A to B. If you think about, if I said, you need to get from New York to San Francisco, right? How many ways could you possibly get from New York to San Francisco?
So many.
So many. And what if you decide you're going to take this particular route and you run into a closed road, which is what happens in life, right? You're going to go from A to B. Well, then you hit a closed road. You need to detour, and that's okay. So I think thinking about it in that way, that there's going to be detours, there's going to be bumps and barriers, and that doesn't mean you did anything wrong.
Yeah. And then looping back to that self-compassion of, it doesn't mean that you failed, you know? And I think everyone can relate to some semblance of that, of trying something and it doesn't work for you, feeling like something that you have failed. I know lots of people, my parents told me they changed their major many times. I've changed my major a few times. I know lots of different people who maybe didn't do a major change, but they maybe stopped participating in a sport or activity that they used to really like and decided to spend their energy elsewhere and try to find things that really gave back to their energy and that filled them up.
Yeah, because there's a difference between participating in something because it will look good on your resume or choosing something because you really love it. And in the end, choosing the something because you really love it is going to pay dividends.
Yeah. And that's really where people with ADHD thrive. Mm-hmm. Like you said in the beginning, is that the things that they are not interested in, it's sometimes very hard for them to complete those things.
Oh, it's but
the
a things, slog.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the things that they are, they're really able to excel at.
Oh, yeah. And build anything out of it. I'm a true believer that whatever career or whatever path you decide to take, if you're super passionate about it and you're willing to put in the work with the passion, you can be successful in anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of, I'm interested to hear about your journey through your career to get to where you are today. You said you took a lot of different paths.
Yeah. So I changed my major 3 times in college, finally settled in business because I felt like it wasn't pigeonholing me, right? Because I wanted to be able to have options, which I didn't realize all this at the time. Started out in the business office at Purdue University. And while it was a great environment, I learned I do not want to work at a cubicle doing financial spreadsheets. Was not for me.
Yeah.
My next step was because I took the wine appreciation class for fun at night at Purdue, when I worked there, led to there was an opening for a marketing person in the wine industry, which my background was marketing. So I took that and I loved that job, right? I was creating events. I was leading wine tastings. I was an international wine judge. I was traveling to Europe and to California, and it was fabulous.
So luxurious.
It was great, which I appreciate it more and more the older I get. I helped people have fun, which was awesome. Then our kids were born. And so I did a ton of different things. I got certified in mindfulness, certified in yoga. I taught preschool. I, you know, all sorts of things. And then when I settled on this career in business, what I think is so great and what has held my interest is the people I work with every day are completely different. Right? The ADHD brain, every single one is very unique. And so I get new experiences every single day. And I get to walk away knowing, because I can tell in their voices and in seeing them, that I was curious and helped them believe in themselves, right? And uncover their strengths and who they really are, not who they've been told that they are. And it's so rewarding. Like, it has not been boring in the least bit.
That is wonderful. That's so inspiring that you took all those different paths until you found the thing that was absolutely right for you. And you also found other things that at the time in your life was right for you.
Yeah. Yes. At those times, like, those were great jobs for the age and the stage I was at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you don't have to just be one thing.
It's not a forever decision.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think you touched on something a little bit that I wanted to maybe talk a little bit more about, is who people with ADHD have been told that they are is different than who they really are.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speak on that.
So I feel like with those negative comments that we tend to get at a younger age, right? And then pair that with the rejection sensitivity, right? So you can really internalize that stuff, right? So typical things you might have heard, you're not good enough, you're lazy, you're unmotivated, you're not living up to your potential, settle down, be quiet, right? So that integrates itself into your neural pathways and those start running highways. So a big thing I work on with people is how do we create new pathways that are actually who you are? And how do we start letting those pathways of who people told us we are fade away and disintegrate? So we work a lot on building neural pathways.
Yeah, that's so cool. I just love learning about the brain.
It's fascinating. And you can change your beliefs and change your pathways. You know, the neuroplasticity is a real thing in the brain. So when I hear people say like, oh, I'm just this, or I can't that, or I, you know, I try really hard to challenge back that language, because in reality, you are in control of who you are. It's just bringing that control internally instead of allowing external forces to have that control over you. And when you make that shift, I tell you, it's empowering and transformative.
Yeah. And it takes a while. It takes practice.
Yes, it does. Because you think about, so, you know, if you're about 20, right, in college, you've run those pathways for 20 years. It's a super highway, some of them. Right? Your brain doesn't even think about it. You automatically run those thoughts. So to create new ones, it's like walking in a grassy field. The first time you walk through grass, you're going to pat the grass down. But if you don't walk that thought again in 2 days, that grass pops back up. So to build a pathway, you have to be thinking these thoughts and challenging those old thoughts multiple times every day. And then over the course of a couple of months, that becomes your new highway. And you forget that you even used to think so horribly about yourself.
Yeah. And it's 100% possible.
Totally. You can possible. Always. I mean, I've change. Done it myself.
Yeah. You can always.
There's the dogs again.
The dogs. You can always change your perception of who you are.
You can always do that. And you are in control of how you perceive yourself. Don't let other people control how you think about yourself.
That is such a wonderful sentiment. So it just, I don't know, wraps perfectly back around to what I want to do with this podcast is to remove that stigma of mental health.
Yes.
Of conversations surrounding it and understanding that the way what you have been told and what other people have told you about mental health or a mental health condition like ADHD that you may have, you're the person that gets to decide how you feel about yourself.
You're exactly right. And what you're going to do with your life and your journey and who you're going to allow on your committee to have a voice in your life. Mm-hmm. Those are your choices.
Absolutely. Well, we are almost at time. So is there anything that you would like to add before we wrap up?
I think if we can encourage people to be curious instead of judgmental and understand that everybody's walking their own walk and you don't know what is behind their walk or how it got to be what it is.
Yeah.
And just having empathy and understanding people do well when they can.
Absolutely. One more question before we go. What changes would you like to see in higher education or just maybe socially to better support people with ADHD?
Yeah. So one of the things I think is so important is just feeling like you're in a safe space and that there's trust, right? So I try to really be open about talking about ADHD and mental health and that this is just a part of life. Like there should not be a stigma about it. I believe my ADHD has given me a lot of advantages with the way I think and the ideas I've created and what I've been able to do. To me, it's been a blessing when I found the right environments for me, right? And I would love everybody else to be working towards that.
Yeah. Be accepting that before judging.
Yes.
That there might be, there is more to the story.
When, be curious.
Be curious, mm-hmm. like you said.
Mm-hmm. Ask questions. Ask open-ended questions, not mm-hmm. assumption questions.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely. One of my favorite things to do is to learn how another person's brain works. I mean, everyone's brain works uniquely, but like I love asking questions about the way that my friends feel and the way that my coworkers think about things.
Yeah.
Especially when it's something that I don't know a lot about. So being curious doesn't mean that you are ignorant. Being curious means that you know, understanding someone and giving someone attention, yes, is a sign of caring. It's a, you know, it's almost like a love language in itself of like, you know, the want to be understood is such a universal thing, no matter who you are.
You're right. Everybody wants to feel safe and wants to be understood.
Yeah. So that, I love that sentiment.
Yeah. Well, thanks. This has been
awesome. Of course. Yes. Well, thank you so much, First Lady Linton, for being a guest on this podcast. If our listeners would like to know more about the resources mentioned in this podcast or our lovely guest here today, they will be linked in the description. If you would like to know more about how to get involved and active on campus and more about the resources that K-State provides for you, again, October is Health and Wellbeing Month. So we are really trying to push and highlight all of the wonderful well-being and mental health resources that we have for you guys. So those will be provided in the description. Thank you so much for listening.